Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Rounding out our first hour on silence, a history lesson. Silence has always been a part of human life, but it's rarely been studied. Author Jane Brocks changed that. With her new book, Silence, A Social History of One of the Least Understood Elements of Our Lives, Jane investigates the pivotal role that silence and isolation has played throughout human history. From the early days of incarceration, visiting the Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia, to uncovering the lives of 12th century monks, to reminding us of the very real punishments that used to face women who just couldn't or wouldn't keep quiet. Jane's book is a profound and comprehensive investigation of how silence can be both so necessary to human life and so destructive when improperly enforced. Silence is currently available in bookstores, and Jane joins us now. Hi, Jane.
Hi. Thank you, Allison, for having me.
How did you become interested in the history of silence?
Well, it started in 2001 when I visited the monastery at Sanank. I think that's where it started. It may have had its seeds earlier, but my visit there in the south of France, I was just taken away by the architecture of the silence and the sense of silence and space in the monastery. But it wasn't until I visited the stabilized ruin of Eastern State Penitentiary a decade later that I really understood sort of how I could form a book that would oscillate between the chosen and imposed silence and maybe amplify the role choice and imposition play in silence in general.
Now, Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia, I've actually been there. You can go there now. It's a stunning building, and there's art installations and all sorts of information you can learn about incarceration. It was conceived by Benjamin Rush, correct?
Right. One of our founding fathers.
Can you tell us about his ideas for this prison and how he envisioned silence as a key part of rehabilitation?
Well, I think to understand his motivations, you have to understand that up until that time, punishment was, criminal justice was a matter of hangings and brandings and whippings. And the New Republic was looking for a more humane way of criminal justice. And Benjamin Rush envisioned the penitentiary as a very humane place based on the monastic cell, that given the isolation and the silence, each prisoner would come to a recognition of his sins and be, after a period of time, be let back out into the world and embraced by the community as a new man. But of course, Rush didn't take into account, I think, that the monastic cell is part of a whole community, and the severe isolation of the cell really was detrimental to the mental health of almost every prisoner. So.
How was the physical structure designed to maximize this, what he thought would be humane solitude?
Well, there were seven ranges of cells in the initial design for the penitentiary, and each cell was a small stone room, 8 by 12 inches. Each cell had its own walled-in exercise yard, and each cell had one window, a round 8-inch oculus cut into the barreled ceiling. So it very much mimed a monastic cell in many ways, but each individual cell could only be accessed in the very first years from outside through the exercise yard. You couldn't even walk into a cell from the corridors so that isolation was considered sort of a maximum in the design.
Was the silence enforceable, or did prisoners figure ways around it? Because human beings want contact.
Right. I mean, the silence was, the breaking of silence was the biggest offense in the penitentiary. They tapped on the pipes. There was a very crude but innovative plumbing system, so the prisoners would tap on pipes. They'd throw notes over the exercise yards, or they would tap on the stone wall. So they found ways to communicate with each other. And in truth, the imposition of absolute isolation and silence wasn't maintained by the wardens and the keeps, because it just, the ideal was one thing, the practical application was another.
How much of all of this had to do with Quaker principles?
Well, Benjamin Rush himself was a Quaker, and the Quakers were very supportive of the idea of the penitentiary. The prison societies in Pennsylvania were great supporters of the penitentiary. So it at its base, it had its foundations in Quaker Pennsylvania. Maybe even more complex than that was the fact that William Penn's ideas of punishment, even before the founding of the nation, were more lenient than in other parts of the country. So Philadelphia itself was very much forward-thinking from its origins about punishment and imprisonment.
My guest is Jane Brox. The name of her book is Silence, A Social History of One of the Least Understood Elements of Our Lives. Jane, you note that silence makes the mind fragile. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, I think of silence as there's no place to hide in silence. You open yourself up to everything, and that's why I think it's both embraced and feared at the same time. Anything can happen when you're in that silence. So that for some, and I think the fragility is not separate from the strengths of silence that you find in silence, that you have to be almost in that fragile state of mind to break through into the strength. So that for, say, a monastic or for a prisoner, it's a place that could be revelatory, or it's a place that could be very destructive. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, yes, it does. You know, in your book, you explore the other side of this, people who actively choose silence part of their lives. Could you tell our audience a little bit, some may know already, but about Thomas Merton?
Right. I mean, Thomas Merton, I chose to feature Thomas Merton because he is so articulate in the struggle for, in the search for silence, in his own search for silence and what it means in generally, not only for monastics, but for the human soul. And I think he does a beautiful job of articulating the struggle he himself had with it, and the struggle I think any human who looks for it has with it, that it's an encounter that is profound. It's an encounter that's always changing. It's never stable. If you think you've found the answer in silence, you only have to wait a little while, I think, to understand that it may not. There's something else after that. He was born in the early 20th century and joined a monastery in Kentucky in the 1940s, and lived into 1968, and had a quarrel with silence at the end when he decided he had to speak out and question his silence when it came to nuclear war and civil rights. And he felt it was more important for him to have a voice than to have silence concerning those things.
And in our final minutes, I want to explore the idea, this fascinating chapters on women in silence. And I'm going to read a little bit. It says, one set of laws applied almost entirely to women and was aimed specifically at muting their voices. Women could be harshly punished and humiliated simply for talking too much or too publicly or in a tone of voice that seemed grating or nagging. Such women were labeled scolds or gossips. And unlike for the crimes of theft, assault, or murder, no concrete measure defined their transgression. Will you share with our audience the sin of being too loud, too much as a woman?
Yes, I mean, this was the hardest part of the book for me to write personally. Sometimes I just had to walk away from the material because, for instance, women in colonial America, they could just be charged with, if they talked too much or their voice was grating, they could be gathered up and attached to a machine and dunked into a lake. five or six times until they agreed to sin no more. But I think the most horrifying thing was that I discovered was in Midlands, England, the use of the scold's bridle, which was a metal contraption put over a woman's face with a bit that was placed in her mouth to prevent her from moving her face, moving her lips, moving her tongue. And she was often paraded through the streets as a means of humiliation as well as punishment. So, you know, I think for women, silence has an added layer of meaning because of the history of being silenced that we're still dealing with to this very day.
That is true. Given all your research, would you recommend that people try some sort of silent retreat?
Oh, I think if you are curious about it, yes, to try it. Not as a duty, but I think if you feel, I mean, silence, I think you have to be willing to search for it. You have to be willing to look for what's there. But I think if you decide to seek it, then it's very much worth going after.
Is it possible in this modern life to find true silence?
Yes, I think you have to choose to. Yeah.
The name of the book is Silence, A Social History of One of the Least Understood Elements of Our Lives. My guest has been Jane Brocks. Jane, thank you so much for joining us on our Hour of Silence on All of It.
Thank you so much, Allison. It's a pleasure.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.